Behind the Badge Illinois, giving you the inside scoop on public safety and those who protect and serve. Your real stories directly from law enforcement experts and get a chance to ask questions about issues you've always wanted to know more about. You have the right to remain informed. This is Behind the Badge Illinois.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Badge Illinois. I'm David Hochberg, your host. We've got a panel of experts here, and we're going to be focusing on the ILACP. I said it right, Kenny. ILACP. For everybody out there, I stood in front of the panel about 3 years ago and continue to say ILAPC, even though I practice it for over an hour and 15 minutes while I was driving to the meeting. It's ILACP, Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. And we're going to talk about all the great things that what the ILACP does, and also talk about how other states have similar boards or organizations that help their law enforcement within their state. But we're going to put the spotlight on the Illinois ILACP because we live here in Illinois. So we've got Kirk Bruggeman O'Fallon, Chief of O'Fallon PD down in Southern Illinois. We got Chief David Byrd up in DeKalb. We've got AJ Bailey and Kenny Winslow from the ILACP. So I'm just going to throw it out to you, Kenny, to explain what ILACP is, why is it important for the chiefs out there, and why the residents of Illinois should care that ILACP exists and what benefit it brings to them.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. The Illinois Associated Chiefs of Police, or ILACP, is a 1,400 plus member organization. We're made up of police chiefs and executive staffs of police departments from around the state. So that could be deputy chiefs, commanders, et cetera. Some are retired, most are active, but some are retired members too. We've been around since 1946. With that said, we're a nonprofit organization that basically tries to professionalize the law enforcement profession even more. Basically, the goal is to professionalize the careers even a bit more than what they are now, or the field. If you had to say four broad buckets or big buckets that we do things in, you could probably lump them all into basically professional development, legislative advocacy, training, and outreach. That's really what we try to do. And there's several things we do under each of those buckets, but those are the big things. When we talk about professional development, we talk about that we want every police department to succeed, because when a police department succeeds, the community succeeds, the chief succeeds, everybody works together and it lifts the profession as a whole. The whole boat rises with the tide. When one fails, we all go down. We see that with some of the incidents we've seen around the country over the last few years. When a bad incident goes sideways in Minnesota, it affects everybody around the country. So again, we try to make sure that we are training our chiefs, that we basically are there to support them through mentorship, through professional development. To go along with that, you know, we got to tell our story. The men and women of this profession do a great job every day. And that's what we talk about with outreach. We talk about building those better relationships with our communities, building those partnerships with our community, but also telling the good work that's out there. You know, that's probably the hardest thing for us to do, because most of us are humble by nature. We don't go out there and brag about the good job. I've seen officers perform CPR on a 2-year-old child. I've seen police officers deliver babies. I've seen police officers run into burning fires and pull people out. I've seen police officers put sucking gunshot wound bandages on people and save their lives. But they go right back to work 10 minutes later like it never happened. They ain't looking for the publicity. They're not looking for the media. And when the media comes, they shy away from it and go the other way. We don't tell our story good enough. And I think that's just because of the type of people that we hire, the quality people we hire. Again, they're not looking for a pat on the back. They're just looking for that self-satisfaction, knowing they did a good job out there.
I'm going to throw it over to Kirk here. So you're down in O'Fallon, Southern Illinois. Dave's up in Northern Illinois, up in DeKalb. When it comes to advocacy, how does the advocacy of the ILACP impact what you do in O'Fallon and the surrounding chiefs in the area, in the Southern Illinois area?
Yeah, so it's huge. You know, for all my Southern Illinois people, all we hear is Chicago, 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 Chicago. You know, everything is about Chicago. And where I think ILACP comes in is it gives us a voice down in Southern Illinois. They pay attention to what's happening all throughout the state and not just up in Chicago. I mean, we see a lot of crazy bills coming through some of the legislators up in Chicago. But what we do as an organization is we work together and we try to take, and I know we don't say we try to take, we do take opinions and what matters all throughout the state and what makes sense throughout the state, because what makes sense up in Chicago doesn't necessarily make sense down in Carbondale, or doesn't make sense down in Cairo or Metropolis. Okay. They're two different worlds. So we kind of have to take a common sense approach to some of this stuff. And I think that's what ILACP does. And it allows that nice, that conversation to happen between police chiefs and say, hey, this isn't going to work for us down here. It might work for you up there. How can we work this out and work with our legislators to get that sort of stuff done? Huge, huge difference over the last 10 years that I've seen too, is ILACP reaching out to the southern departments and trying to get that whole state feel instead of just north of I-80. Kudos to ILACP, and I'm really proud to be a member of it, part of that moving forward.
Dave, what Chief Bird up in DeKalb, you know, another foundational structure that the ILAC brings is also the professionalism of law enforcement. And how does that help you motivate your current staff of officers? And how does it help you attract new law enforcement, potential officers up in DeKalb?
Yeah. So, I mean, when you talk about Illinois Associated Chiefs of Police, man, it's such a big resource. I know we keep saying that over and over again, but it's really, that's what it is. It's a resource for other departments to use for a lot of different reasons. So recruiting is one. Like you said, you just mentioned it. You know, how do we get other, you know, new awesome candidates to come in and be police officers? Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police is someone that, you know, that organization actually promotes that, you know. So we get a lot of assistance just from that alone. The ability to share thoughts, I mean, it's a pipeline, you know. So and coming from an agency that was more, you know, self-efficient, self-contained with Illinois State Police, kind of did everything within the framework of the organization. But we were bigger. We were larger. We had a lot of different components. But now that I've moved to a agency that doesn't have that robust structure, and, you know, it's a little different, you know, and you need that assistance. So, you know, you need the resources that the ILACP provides. So it's unbelievably impactful here for us. And I'll be, you know, candid when, you know, I arrived here 3 years ago. I walked into an unbelievable position. I mean, this department, you know, was standing on, you know, strong foundation. I mean, you know, I mean, I really couldn't ask for a better situation. It wasn't like I had to walk in and just start building blocks. You know, it didn't happen that way. So I was very, you know, lucky and blessed to walk into a situation like this. However, I did notice that, you know, like I said, because the structure wasn't as robust as Illinois State Police, I needed help. And I could seek assistance and thoughts from other chiefs in the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. And I think that's where, at least me personally, I get the biggest bang for my buck with the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. Because, I mean, I just saw one the other day, you know, chiefs have things that are going on in their town. You know, they throw out a question and they get all these different, you know, thoughts about that situation that some chiefs have already either been through and they have experience in. And I mean, it just makes, you know, the job a lot easier when you're running a department to have, you know, other, you know, chiefs or administrators that have been through this already, and they can help you out a lot with that. And vice versa, it's reciprocal in nature, because, you know, I get the opportunity to say, hey, we do that here, and call me, and I can tell you exactly what the pitfalls are, the positive things that are going to come out of it, and help them expedite the process if it's something they want to do. So very important, though, Dave, you know, and Kenny and his team, AJ, you guys do an amazing job. We appreciate everything you guys do. I just want you guys to hear that from my mouth to your ears. Thank you for that.
I'm going to throw it over to AJ real quick, because, you know, I'm a sponsor of the ILACP, not only of this podcast, but also of the different events. There's one coming up at the end of April. AJ, I'm getting your emails about what type of tchotchkes are you giving out, and, you know,
proper time to drop their things off and set things up. Accreditation is a big key of another big key. You know, there are many big factors of the ILACP. Can you speak about how you are getting that message out to the different courses and the different opportunities you have for the chiefs to get accredited in the different areas they should get accredited or maybe want to get accredited in?
Of course. I do want to mention one thing. Kirk is more than just a member of the ILACP. He kind of sold himself short. He's also one of our regional vice presidents. So he has a big stake in the game, as it were. So, and we appreciate everything that he does.
Well, there goes the modesty, right? I mean, you just talked about the modesty, Mr. Vice President. All right, there you go.
I should have worn my tuxedo today.
But I did see that me, Kirk, and Kenny are all wearing our logo wear.
I did.
Well, I just want to let you know the chief from Elgin isn't on today, so you don't have to follow her because you know I know you were kind of.
I'm only wearing an ILACP logo because I haven't got a David Hochberg quarter zip to wear.
Okay, well once I order them and get them in, I'll send one down to you for sure.
Speaking well, let's talk about accreditation. Our ILACP store is now up and available on our website.
Nice. All right, noted.
Case anybody is looking for some more logo wear themselves. Before I get to accreditation, there was one thing I wanted to mention. Chief Bird was talking about how you can always reach out to different people in the organization for advice and help like that. And one of the ways that we do that is our members only forum, where members who are paying members have a way to privately ask people, just throw it out to all of our members if they have a question. For example, most recently we had something on administrative adjudication. Somebody had some questions about that. And then people start chiming in. Hey, I know a little bit about that. One was about backyard breeders. One was about what is your policy on this endeavor? But we've had, one was even about how working out on duty. You know, you can really just throw out any questions you want to our membership and you get a bunch of responses and you get responses from everyone from north and south. And I think that's a really big beneficial thing that we offer. When it comes to accreditation, we offer ILEAP. And that is one of our biggest programs and something I think is something great that we're bringing here. A lot of people have CALEA, but more people need ILEAP because it's such a great resource. And our team, our director, I should say, Jeff Hamer, he is so great with working with people and he will work with you to get your policies where they need to be. They're not just going to come in and be like, you don't have this, you don't have this, you need this, you need this. He'll work with you to help you create these things to get
What's
you where
it called
you
again?
ILEAP. ILEAP.
What does that mean? What for a lay person like me who doesn't know anything about what you just said, what does that mean for our listeners and our viewers who might want to dive a little deeper to know what ILEAP means?
ILEAP is Illinois Law Enforcement Accreditation Program.
Okay.
Yep. And if you go to our website, it's right under the programs tab where you can learn a whole bunch about that, ways to get in touch with our director as well, who is just such a champion for ILEAP in of itself. We always offer a course on it at our annual training conference, as well as our conference and expo that comes up in August. It's the training conference that's coming up in April that's going to be a really big deal. We're really going to do a class there about getting started with ILEAP because, you know, some people might need a helping hand to get, you know, kind of started with the ILEAP process. Right now, we're offering a grant for some people if they want to get started with that process, where it's basically you can get accredited for free. If you meet with all the qualifications, and it's pretty easy to meet those qualifications. Just reach out to Jeff Hamer. He will get you all set up, all started, all ready to go. And if you want to reach him or any of the ILEAP staff, it's ILEAPstaff@gmail.com. Kenny, if there's something else that you'd like to mention about ILEAP, I'll let you jump in here.
Yeah, I think I would just take it back a little bit. Like, so some of the people who maybe not familiar with law enforcement accreditation, kind of talk about what that is. And, back in the early 2000s, some of my predecessors started the Illinois Law Enforcement Accreditation Program, or ILEAP, as AJ stated. And the reason to bring that back is that we believe that as we try to professionalize the career and the profession of law enforcement and rise it up, we wanted to ensure that there was a baseline of best practices that were being followed. And what it is basically is ensuring that departments are not only have policies that endorse the best policies or best practices of law enforcement around the country, but that they follow it and that they train on it. And that's really what that program is. We bring in the outside assessors to come in. They review them ahead of time. This is about an 18-month process. And then they come in to make sure you show proofs that you actually train on, that you're following. Then they come in to witness it to make sure that it's being done and done correctly. but it's a way of basically saying that my organization endorses best practice. And what's the advantage for a community and what's the advantage for a department? It's almost like a bulletproof vest when it comes to lawsuits. It insulates you a little bit. It's still going to hurt like heck when you get the lawsuit, just like when you get shot with a bulletproof vest on, but it gives you some protection. It gives your community some protection. It can reduce your risk management fees, et cetera, your insurance fees for your communities by basically stating that, no, we know that we're going to train our people to the best that they can be. We're going to follow best practices. We're going to know that our policy and procedures are up to snuff. And then if we do get sued, because ultimately in this field, you're always going to get sued. But with that, it helps protect you in court from liability. And that's really what accreditation is about. It's about rising the tide, like I said, for everybody, but also protecting our organizations. And so the reason the iLEAP program came around is because there's really only one national standard, and that's called CALEA. And some of our departments are certified by both organizations. Some are just in one or the other. But the reason for it is that it's very expensive. When I was with the city of Springfield, the chief of police, it was about $20,000 to get started under the CALEA program. And then there's an annual fee on top of that. We tried to basically bring a very similar program that's comparable at a much cheaper cost, because we're not a for-profit organization. So we try to push it down basically to cover just our cost with it. So you can become iLEAP certified for as low as $1,000 a year to start, and then $400 for a year after that. So you have to recertify every 3 years. We want to make sure that, you know, you didn't do this just as one time. As soon as we walked out the door, you changed your practices, et cetera. We want to come back and make sure and reaccreditate you every 3 years. We know that leadership changes, positions change. So sometimes policies change. So we just want to make sure we're up to date on that. Plus, this is an ongoing process, because as laws change, policies have to be updated. As court cases come down, policies have to be updated. But again, it's a way to help protect your community and your department.
All right, and I want to, and there's two other major points I want to cover. One is chief certification and mentoring. So, Kirk, which one would you, out of those two? You know, this is like game show here. You got chief certification, or you got mentoring that you'd like to talk about, and then Dave will get this, the one you don't choose.
Well, Dave's going to get chief certification because I haven't completed my chief certification yet. I mean, that's one of my things I'm going to do this year. But the mentoring is something that is it's incredibly important to our profession, because when you look at that vast number of police departments we have, you know, you've got somebody from Chicago with, you know, thousands and thousands of officers, and you got a bunch of, you got other departments with chiefs that they might be working chiefs, and they're out working the street in addition to doing all of the other things that they have to do, the administrative stuff, the, you know, internal investigations, the budgeting and all that stuff. So when you have a lot of departments that may not have the resources that some of the bigger departments have, like us and Chief Byrd, so that mentoring program is really key to provide some of those new chiefs. When you get into that job, it can be overwhelming when you become a new chief. You got everything coming at you, and especially if you're a chief from a small town and you have to do everything. You don't have anybody to help. So this mentoring program pairs up existing chiefs with new chiefs, and, you know, and they meet and they have the ability to meet once a month or talk every few weeks and just kind of go over things. And it's a sounding board. It's somebody that you get to know, somebody that you can reach out to. In addition to all the other chiefs throughout the state, it's a personal connection with somebody to help out with those things that you may not be very good at. Because let's face it, we're not all good at everything. I mean, I'm pretty great at a lot of things. There are some things that I'm not so good at, and sometimes I need help. And I reach out to Kenny, and I reach out to other chiefs. And it's nice to have that mentorship. I think it's really with any profession. You want to have that mentorship, and it's so important as a police chief to have that ability to reach out to someone and get help with those things. So that is something that I'm very passionate about, and I think is a wonderful, wonderful program that ILACP puts on.
How often do you guys get together with chief? How often do you get together with other chiefs within your Southern Illinois fraternity down there? Is there a quarterly meeting? Do you? I know you had mentioned that you went to lunch with the chief whose officer saved that lady, you pulled the lady out of the her mobile home that was on fire down there, and you guys, you know, had lunch or something the week before. How often do you guys and gals get down in Southern Illinois, get together outside of the ILACP?
Oh, so yeah, we have another organization, and there's a bunch of regional organizations throughout the state. Ours is the Southern Illinois Police Chiefs Association, which is just a subset of ILACP. It's a bunch of chiefs and command staff from the Metro East, from several counties down by us, basically around the St. Louis area. And we meet monthly, and we have our own regional associations. And there's regional associations all throughout the state that meet monthly. In addition to those regional associations, generally counties, we'll also have monthly meetings. I have monthly meetings with other chiefs in St. Clair County. There's chiefs meetings in Madison County. They're happening all over the state. So, you know, law enforcement, it's not as much like corporate America. You know, there's really no secrets, you know, in law enforcement. I think there's no like corporate secrets. Like, I don't want this person to know this because they're going to be better at this. I really feel like policing, especially in Illinois with ILACP and our regional organizations, are always working to better themselves, to learn from not only our successes, but man, we learn from our mistakes more than anything. And unfortunately, we make some mistakes sometimes, but that's why when we make those mistakes, we share those and we get together with those other chiefs and say, hey, we screwed up on this. You need, hey, this is what we did wrong, and this is where we go. It's constant learning process with that.
God, I'm going to go over to you, Dave. Chief certification, what is it and why is it important?
Well, when it comes to the certification program, you know, it's pretty impactful. And, you know, it's, you know, it gives someone coming to this, the new, you know, position of chief of police, which is very, like I said, it can be very intimidating for a lot of people, depending on, you know, what structure you came from. And, you know, you have, be honest with you, could have someone coming from the rank of sergeant in some areas walk in and actually interview and get a chief position in a smaller town. And they're coming from the rank of sergeant. So, I mean, you could see where it'd be really important that they have some type of certification process so you can be, you know, the best chief you can be. I mean, you're stepping into an arena that you really haven't had a footprint in, you know, coming from, you know, basically running a shift or a platoon to running a complete department, you know, and it might not be full, you know, might not be 100 strong, but even if it's 20 to 30, you know, personnel, is something you've never done before. So I can see, you know, where the certification process will be really impactful in those situations. I know for me personally, like I said, coming from the state police, I mean, you know, I mean, hell, District Chicago alone, and this goes back when I was a captain, it was 200 strong, 215 officers, you know, and I was at the rank of captain. So, of course, I didn't leave until I made colonel. So, I mean, of course, the numbers increase, but you also have a lot of help with the Illinois State Police. You know, the organizational chart is extremely big, and you know, and you can lean on different people for a lot of different things. But once you get into these smaller departments, where it's like Kirk said, sometimes it's just you. And so you need to have all your ducks in a row. You need to have, you know, that certification to say, hey, here, I'm checking all the boxes. This is what it's going to take for me, at least foundationally, to be a strong police chief, a strong administrator. And those are the things that the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police provide in that, you know, in that program. So I personally haven't been through it. I'm no kid, he can speak to the details of it. But I know how important it would be. I can just imagine. There are several chiefs in DeKalb County who started from a rank of sergeant and basically interviewed for a chief job and they were able to obtain that position, but it's very impactful for them. So Kenny might want to, like I said, speak a little bit more about the details of it. So
go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about police chief certification, it was really designed for those chiefs that were aspiring, or those candidates aspiring to be chief, those who wanted to rise to the ranks, and help them identify what skill sets they need to improve, where they need a little extra work on. And then basically what it does, it sets a foundation and makes sure they have the foundational skills and basis, foundational skills and knowledge base to be successful in the position. You know, there's a written test with it. Then there's an oral board interview, something like you would go through a hiring process with a community. And they ask you a lot of the same questions, but we're looking for your background. We're looking for your character, your morals, and, you know, make sure that one, you're a person of character, moral, and high morals that would be a good leader. Additionally, we look at leadership skills. We look at job knowledge and competency. And then we look at communication skills. And what, again, it identifies where those weaknesses are. You know, we look at experience with labor relations. That's a huge part of what we do as chiefs. But also being a good team player. When you're a chief, they both kind of hit on, Dave and Kurt both kind of hit on, you're not just a chief of police, okay? In these small towns, you're part of the city administrative team, the city management team. And a lot of times you get called to do things that are not police work. You know, you have to deal with problems. Because really, when you look at law enforcement as a whole, law enforcement just a portion of what we do. Problem solving is really the crutch of what we do. And at the city level, a lot of times they look at the police chief because a lot of the other departments don't have the wide variety of experience that these men have and the ability to multitask. So they lean on the police chief for a lot of stuff, whether that be the mayor, the city manager, the public works director, or the fire department, et cetera, or anybody else that might be involved. So really, the police chief certification is something that somebody who's aspiring to be a chief can kind of measure themselves and see where they need to improve at. And that's what that's about. You know, additionally, we pride ourselves on, you know, additional training for our people. Every year we offer a new chief, new police chief class that's held every year, once a year in September. So basically right now we're going around the state. We keep a list of new chiefs throughout the state. We reach out to them and we try to get them into this class. And this class is only a week long. It's very abbreviated. But we try to touch on all the hot topic items they maybe have never been exposed to. For some people who've already been to the FBI National Academy or Northwestern's Police Staff Command or Southern Police Institute, it's just a nice review. But for other people who, like Dave said, may have been a sergeant who became a chief in some small town that has no experience, we want that chief to succeed. So we try to get him into that class, give him a basis. And then when they leave the class, we try to hook him up with a mentor. Our mentorship program is pretty new. We've always had a kind of informal mentorship that comes through natural networking. But Kurt hit on, we try to pair somebody up with an experienced chief. There's nothing more important that when the crap hits the fan, you don't have to have all the answers, but you know, you need to know where to get the answers. And having a Rolodex of 1,400 police chiefs from around the state to call upon to ask a quick question is very important, you know. And that mentorship just brings that down to that one-on-one person, you know, that can help you do that. And again, as chief, you deal with a lot of stuff. You know, one thing we cover that a lot of people don't think about is that you have to survive and thrive in a political environment, and you have to know how to do that. That's what usually gets our chiefs on the outskirts, is when they can't navigate those waters. I always tell people, it's like walking a tightrope with the four-headed monster. And people are like, well, what do you mean by that? Well, you have four big entities that you have to keep satisfied as a chief. One can be out of line, but you get more than one out of line, you're probably on the unemployment line. So the way this works is, you know, you have to answer to your administration. That's your mayors or your city managers. You got to make sure that you're carrying out their vision and their mission. You have to support your men and women and be a advocate for them and make sure that you are treating them right and doing them right. You have to be an advocate for your citizens. And then last but not least, the city council or the village board, you know. So, again, you get pulled in so many different ways, you know. Everybody used to be like, well, you only got one boss. No, when I was the chief of police in the city of Springfield, I had 120,000 bosses because everybody has a word, everybody has a say, and everybody has a voice, and you want to treat everybody fairly and equitably.
Yeah. So, AJ, how do you – I'm sorry. Did somebody want to jump in?
Yeah, Bailey had a hand up.
Yep. Yeah. Go ahead, AJ. I was going to throw it to you anyway, AJ. I was going to ask you, how do you get – all of these topics out to the public so the public knows that it, you know, that I'm not just a cop, right? I'm not just a police officer in Southern Illinois, Northern Illinois, city of Chicago. How are you getting this out to the public so the public knows what your organization does and why it's important?
Of course. One quick thing though, I wanted to just circle back to the new chief certification. We have two ways you can do that. You can be certified chief eligible, or you can become a certified chief, because the chief certification program, it's open to all police chiefs, deputy chiefs, commanders, or anybody equivalent that has at least 10 years of full-time law enforcement experience. You can all apply And we offer that written test first. And actually at our April conference, I believe it's on the 25th to be for the specific date, we are offering a free chance to take that written test. So even if you're just curious, you're like, I wonder if I can even pass this. Well, let's give it a try. Go ahead and give it a try. It is a hard test because you know what? It's a hard job. And we want to make sure we get the most qualified people in there to get that certification to become certified police chief or certified police chief eligible. And if you're interested in more information on that, our website contains a whole bunch of information. That's kind of my baby right there is the website. And that's where I put a lot of our information out on. So people know what's going on from iLEAP to police chief certification to our mentorship program. And that's one of the ways that we get our word out there. Another way that we just came up with back in August is we have an ILACP mobile app. And it's very, very helpful. You can take a look at all the different things that we have to offer as the ILACP. And it's very helpful for our members as well, because we've been able to push out, hey, we need you to submit a witness slip for this this bill. That's not great for law enforcement. Let's just face it. We need you to submit this witness slip opposed or in support of, and it's a quick way to get the word out there. And we're going to be utilizing that for our conferences and expos as well. The other way is social media. Let's face it, that's the way a lot of people digest their information. We have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We tried Threads, but let's face it, nobody's really on Threads right now. But we also have LinkedIn. And it's interesting to note that the different crowds that we have on each of those platforms. We have a lot of supporters on Facebook, a lot of supporters, people who are in favor of law enforcement. They feel for law enforcement when they go through things. And so what I try to do is I try to share our message. We talked earlier about how police chiefs and people in the law enforcement profession are very humble people, you know, everyone except for Kirk. But that's okay. We won't hold it up against him. But most people are humble. So I try to find those stories out there amongst our members and even those who aren't members. Hey, if it's a new officer, let's go ahead and give them a big congratulations and best of luck. Or you know what? This person just got received a life-saving award just in their little department. Let's let the whole state know about it. But people need to know how officers are. I shared a post this morning about someone who sent in just like a quick thank you to a police officer, to a local department. And it not just made that police officer's day, but it made the entire department's week, because a simple thank you can really do wonders for just morale. And it just brings a smile to people's faces. So I try to find the little stories, the big stories, and all the stories I can find, I try to put them out there on social media and in different avenues. And of course, we have this podcast where we get a lot of information out there, where you get to know police officers, get to know police chiefs like Chief Bird and Chief Bergerman. So, and all the other chiefs that we have as co-hosts. I don't want to mention that. I apologize. But this podcast has been a big leap for us to get the word out there. We have our YouTube channel where we've got messages up there for the public as well. When it comes to policy patrol, you know, what are the legislative things that we're trying to tackle right now? We have new chief chats. So if somebody just started the chief position, I will try to get an interview with them and just share that on our YouTube page so people can get to know them as a person. There was one I did, I think it was Chief Yates, and I had no idea that he was a musician. And just to get to know him and like even just what music he likes. And then you get to view police officers, police chiefs as people. They're more than just a badge. And that's part of what I try to share with everybody. And I think I rambled a little bit, but I'm just so proud of the members and everyone who's a member of the profession that I kind of tend to ramble a little bit.
Maybe we can get Kenny to do a TikTok dance or something for ILACP.
I'll tell you what, when Kirk passes the chief certification, Kenny will do a TikTok dance in O'Fallon in your office. I just negotiated that.
On your desk there, okay?
On top of your desk. You'll have to reinforce the desk. But yeah, exactly. Nothing against us bigger bone guys, Kenny. I don't want any lawsuits happening or insurance claims.
They got all kinds of money down O'Fallon. They can afford a new desk. We're good.
Hey, this sounds like a little Coyote Ugly type.
Kirk needs a special dancing desk.
Ooh. Yeah. So I want to throw it back out, because I know a large portion of what you all do, Kenny, and it is legislation, right? It's unfortunately probably more than 60% of your job is just tracking all the incoming. Like Kirk mentioned earlier, right there. I've been down to Springfield. I've lobbied on my industry's very unsuccessfully on my industry's behalf. And you know, I walked around those buildings and got my 10,000 steps in, and I could have just put my head through the wall and gotten more done. Okay. And I took a nap on the way home because I left at 4 a.m, but whatever. Okay. So I've been in your shoes. I've been in Kirk's shoes. I've been in Dave's shoes. You know, all of this stuff is coming at you, and things happening up in Northern Illinois, you know, exactly what Kirk said, Northern Illinois, Dave's up in DeKalb. I went to school in DeKalb, right? It's 90 miles outside of the 100 miles outside of the city. And you think, oh, you know, he's part of Chicago. No, it's completely different for everybody that doesn't realize. DeKalb's a big town, but it's a smaller town compared to all the things going on in Chicago. But I'll throw it to the Chiefs and then funnel it back to Kenny. What type of things do you guys have coming out of your areas, Dave, and your areas, Kirk, that are important to you, but might not be important to, like, Dave might be important to you and to Cal, but might not be as important down to Kirk and his crew down in Southern Illinois. And Kirk, what's important to you? You know, so we could see how Kenny has to sort through all of these different challenges that he has when he goes to talk to the 108 different state elected a House of Representatives. 108, 118 in the House of Representatives in Illinois. What is it?
118.
You see? Okay. And then you got to deal with all the senators. So, Dave, what's a topic that's important to the Northern Illinois area that might not impact Kirk as much?
Well, when I think about, the extension of Chicago, even though we put some miles in distance away from the city, but we also get extremely impacted by the criminal, you know, nexus that is all Chicago, metropolitan Chicago area. So, crime is since I've been here, everything has been about crime reduction. Because you went to school here, you know how DeKalb used to be.
Yeah.
So I get that question, or I don't know, maybe more of a demand, in the streets every day. When I go, if I stop and have breakfast at the local diner, you know, people will walk up to me and they'll say, man, we want old DeKalb back. So old DeKalb means, hey, maybe every now and then you get a bike stolen out of a garage. Okay. So of course, those days are long gone. So so I hear that more than anything. So I try my best and I direct all my efforts to get back to old DeKalb when it pertains to crime. So that's kind of the biggest thing for them. And I know we spoke about this before, crime, it just depends on where you're at. It has a different impact here, than it does in, let's say, the Chicago metropolitan area. Certain things in Chicago metropolitan area are acceptable. I hate to say it, but there's certain things that most people will accept, but here in DeKalb, even the most minor, situation that, that in Chicago, people would probably look at and say, hey, we'll keep walking and keep going on their day here. People are going to stop in their tracks and they're going to be upset about it. So I had to, really humble myself personally and understand that things are different situationally. So crime has been the big part. And I use that as a foundation to say, hey, I want to get back to what old DeKalb used to look like. And I have a lot of residents here who are in their 80s and even 90s. And believe me, they will tell you what old DeKalb looked like. And they have no problems with stopping you in the middle of the street to do that. So, and I'm sure Kirk would say the same thing. Kenny, as a prior chief of Springfield and working in Springfield, knows that crime is always going to be it's going to be front and center, primary, public safety. That's got to be paramount, probably, I would say, pretty much in every city. But the levels of, how they feel about it, the strength of their concern is just different in different areas. And so that's, to me, it's all about reducing crime, Dave. It really is, because people have realized that no matter how affluent the area you live in, I say this all the time. You know, people feel like, oh, well, you know, I mean, this is Burr Ridge. Can't happen in Burr Ridge. Oh, yeah. It can happen in Burr Ridge. You know, so it doesn't matter how much money you make and how big your house may be. And a dark alley is a dark alley, and you got to stay out of it because there are predators everywhere. So to ask your question, crime is on the forefront here in DeKalb. They want old DeKalb back, and I'm doing everything I can to give them some resemblance of what old DeKalb used to look like.
And when they tell you that, Dave, ask them about Dots's breakfast place back in the day.
Okay.
Just there was a half order of gravy and biscuits and a full order. Depends on how, and she opened up at 4 to handle all the farmers that came in.
Gotcha.
And all the drunk college kids. So it depends on how much alcohol you can consume. If you can handle a half order or a full order of Dots biscuits and gravy. So
now where was this located at, Dave?
This was over by Tom and Jerry's, just as you cut into town. It was right there by Lord Stanley's. So ask the old timers when they drop a Dots on them and sit down for about an hour and a half and have them explain what Dots is all about.
I'll ask some of these guys what they know about it. That's cool.
You're welcome, by the way. That's a nugget. There you go. You're welcome. All right, Kurt.
Thanks, Dave.
Kurt, down in Southern Illinois, you know, crime is 50 states. You got crime everywhere, right? Is there a certain topic that you all and all the chiefs down in Southern Illinois are having challenges with that you'd want Kenny to quarterback and or running back it with the state legislature?
Yeah, I think we have very similar wants and needs as other areas in the state. I guess my biggest concern is sometimes with the legislator is they want to legislate the entire state based upon one or two incidents that happen within their local area. And I bring up just school resource officers. And I know there was a big deal up in Chicago. Let's pull all the school resource officers out of the schools and let's get them out. And it's like, so if this gains traction and somebody decides, hey, well, that's a great idea. They're terrible to be in schools. And they want to do that for the entire state. Well, that's not our, I mean, that's not for most of the state, but that's not our, that's not what we have grown to expect down here. Our school resource officers are an integral part of our police and our community. And in maybe some areas, people view them as, you know, and they're not part of that community policing. So rather than legislate for the entire state, one of the things that we want to do is just take a common sense approach. And I think that's where we go to the ILACP and say, you know, hey, this doesn't make sense. I get what this certain legislator wants to do up there, but that's not something that we want to see for the entire state. That's not what we want to see for up there for us. So that's, you know, but other than that, I think we all are in the same boat. You know, the big topic things, you know, with the Safety Act and training and trying to keep our officers trained and trying to do something that's reasonable with our training. You know, I mean, we have officers that are, you know, that work all year long and just trying to, and, you know, there's certain topics that come up and they, you know, somebody looks good to say, hey, well, we want you to train 3 hours on this every single year. And then somebody says, well, I want you to train 5 hours on this or 4 hours on this. Well, at some point, it's got to give. You know, we can't continue to just stack and stack and stack and stack. We got to find out what's important, what's the needs of our organizations. And that's where the ILACP comes in to be that voice for us to say, all right, let's hold off on this. Let's come up with a common sense approach that we can all work with. And I think that what Kenny and our legislative director or our legislative lead, Chief Mark Maton, that's what they're really good at. And I'll tell you right now, I don't have time and most chiefs don't have time for this. You know, I mean, if you know this from being up in Springfield and you're looking through the list of bills that come through every year, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bills. Who has time to read through all these bills and pay attention to what's going on? And if you don't have somebody on your side or somebody taking a look and watching these things, then, you know, something can just slip through. It happens all the time.
Yeah. And to your point, I was standing outside the House of Representatives. They're voting on a gun bill. Then they're voting on an education bill. Then they're voting on a farm bill. Then they're voting on a, a automotive bill. You know, I'm just like, what the hell is going on here? I was like, Kenny, you've been there one after the other. It's absolutely insane. So I'll bring it back to you, right? So you've got I-80, right, that cuts the state up north, and you know, rural is. I know there's a rural areas north of Route 80, but south of Route 80 is really rural till you get down to Springfield and Champaign and Carbondale and other areas. But how do you do your job separating what Dave's dealing with and what Lou and Elgin and, you know, our Elgin police chief and our Peoria police chief who was on, you know, deal with, as opposed to what Kirk and his chiefs in the smaller populated areas deal with? How do you sort all of that, all those bills?
Well, we have a very good legislative committee that, like Kirk said, that Chief Maton heads that as our chair. It's made up of about 30 chiefs around the state that really help me go through the bills, sort through the bills, and try to figure out what are our priorities, which one we should track. But then things pop up, and that's where, you know, those relationships inside the Capitol, along with our head of governmental affairs, John Milner, helps us try to keep on top of. And every once in a while, something pops, you know, something popped on Monday that we didn't have on our radar that would basically allow organizations organizing every position besides the chief of police, you know. So basically every position all the way up to the chief could be unionized. And we're not against unions by no means, or labor. In fact, we support that. But, you know, as a chief, you have to be able to point people around you that see your vision, understand the mission, and are willing to carry it forward, especially if you're talking about change or being a change agent. Or maybe you came in from the outside as a chief because there was a problem or some type of issue inside the department, and now they want to go in a different direction. So, you know, again, there's just these bills that come up, and sometimes they pop out of the middle of nowhere. Sometimes they're on the radar. And then you get the fact that we're a very diverse state. We're also a very diverse set of police chiefs, and we have different ideas on how we should go on different topics, et cetera. And we don't have all the resources. We don't all have the same resources. So really a lot of we do with legislative advocacy is try to educate legislators, because I think Dave said it and Kurt both said it. Sometimes something bad happens and they try to legislate their way out of it. Just like they always tell us as police, well, we can't arrest our way out of this problem. I always try to say, we can't legislate our way out of this either. So let's try to figure this out together. Prime example, there's a bill in the House right now about encryption of radios and trying to educate people why we need to encrypt our radio channels, and why, you know, for tactical reasons and officer safety and community safety, that we have to do that. You know, with technology, the bad guys are hearing us coming if we're on an open radio. They know where we're at and they're gone before we get there. So how, you know, educate them why it's important, but then also try to balance, well, the media wants access to know what's going on. So can you put everything on a half hour delay on a website? When I try to educate them, not everybody has a website. Not everybody has a webmaster that can put something on a website. All these things, but they just think that, hey, everybody's got these tools and we don't, you know, we don't. So you got to try to educate the legislators. Usually there's some common ground in there we can get to, but also the special interest groups and the advocacy groups. You know, I spend a lot of my time with advocacy groups talking about why this is a good idea, but it's just not feasible or operational. We can't do it, you know, and sometimes that is very contentious because, you know, they're very passionate about their subject, you know. And I'll tell you one right now in the House right now that's got a lot of steam that we're working with and we're trying to find some common ground on is the fact that domestic violence victims want police to go to a house and get the weapons of the alleged offender within 24 hours. And by time you trying to explain to them how a search warrant works, explaining to them how to get a search warrant, explaining that, you know, just the communication from the judge to potentially the clerk's office to the police department to us doing our homework to make sure that if we have to do the search warrant, and depending on the type of background we have, we may have to do that with a SWAT team or an emergency response team, or we may be able to do that with three or four officers. It just depends on the totality of the circumstances. But explaining to them that that's not going to get done in 24 hours. There's just no way. And then how do we do that in some jurisdiction when there's only one officer? You know, does one officer going to go do a search warrant by itself? No. I tell people all the time when I was trying to educate the legislature that when we go to get a DNA sample, that may just be a hair fiber or a cheek swab. We take a minimum of three officers with us. And they're like, Well, why do you need three officers to go get a cheek swab? Well, let me explain to you why. Because when I go there, I got to have the officer who that is going to knock on the door and deal with the subject matter. Okay, the person we're getting the sample from. I got to have another officer with him as backup to watch his back and in case the guy gets out of line. And I got to have a third officer to watch everybody else in the house and everybody else in case they want to, you know, something goes sideways and then they jump in. That's the minimum. You know, you look at Cook County, I believe they sent out 4 to 6 man teams. That's bigger than probably 300 departments in the state. So when we pass this legislation, we have to look at it and they go, well, the sheriff's department can back you up. Well, somebody's sheriff's department only got 1 or 2 people for over 100-mile radius. So again, you know, it's not a bad idea. I understand, but we got to talk about the logistics and the operational capabilities to be able to do this. But it's just a wide variety. You know, we just have to balance everybody's interests and try to find some common ground between, again, the legislators, the special interest groups, the advocates, and law enforcement itself, you know, and it's not always easy. But that's what we do in this here. We talk about education. It's not just educating the legislators, but it's educating the public. That's where the outreach kind of ties into. That's where the shared principles come in. That's where, you know, community education at the grassroots level at the departments. You know, when I was chief of police for the city of Springfield, I was approached by the NAACP and they came to me and said, we want you to teach people their rights. And we were like, why do you want me to teach people their rights? They should know their rights. Well, when you start looking and seeing all these things go sideways in the country, all these bad incidents, a lot of times they go sideways because people think they know their rights, but they don't. So as a way to try to avoid some of the situations we've seen around the country, we started that program. We started educating members of our community on their rights, you know, and we targeted young people. We targeted people under the age of 25, under the age of 21, the high schools, because again, when you look at what's occurring, these things that go sideways, that's the typical age group. And so that's why we started educating them. A lot of people think that a police officer can't order me out of my car. Well, yes, we can. I can order you back into the car, too. No, you can't. You can't search my car. No, you got to read me my rights each time you go to arrest me. No, I don't. So we start explaining those rights and educating people to try to bring down the tension, to try to de-escalate situations before they rise. And I'll be honest with you, in my police department, it wasn't popular the first couple of times we went to do this, and it was difficult. But over time, it became normal for us. It became normal is what we're doing. Now you're seeing people all around the state do it. So, again, that's just about just like laws. We have to educate citizens on what this law actually does. And when you're talking about the state house, there's no way these legislators understand everything that's in those laws. They don't have the time to read them. They just don't. I don't have the time to read them all. And I'm there from 8 a.m. till 9 p.m. the last 4 days in a row. So it just is part of what it is. They don't have time sort of relying on what somebody tells them. They're relying on what an advocate tells them. They're relying on what a lobbyist is telling them. And sometimes we have to live with the outcome of that. So that's my job over there, is try to educate them on our views of what this law does. I sometimes have to lean on attorneys to find out exactly what it does. You know, and sometimes the vast majority of legislators have good intents, okay? They're good people. They come there with good intents. But they're trying to live to what their constituency wants, which is admirable. But they don't understand how it may negatively impact community safety, public safety, or law enforcement as a whole. And that's part of that education.
All right, we're going to wrap it up here. I'm going to throw it over to Dave. And I'll let you take us out, Dave, in this portion of the Behind the Badge. Illinois sponsored by me, Team Hochberg. If you're looking to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home, we give substantial discounts. Lou's daughter is buying a home now. We extended it to family members as well. We're crediting her $1,495 origination fee to help the young lady get into her home. So all of your family members, it's available for as well. 855-56-DAVID, go to 56david.com. So I got the official money part out of it. If you're looking to sponsor the podcast, give me a call at the same number, 855-563-2843. Always looking for new sponsors. And Dave, I want you to take us out. You had a rough week. One of your 35-year-old officer, just out of respect to her and her family and your police force up there, you want to just mention what happened and shine some light on the officer who lost her life, and let's pay her the respect that she deserves.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, I think it was last Thursday. It wasn't I got a text from one of my officers who said that a DeKalb County deputy had gotten struck in a traffic crash incident. She was, like I said, I think I told you guys earlier, she's running stationary radar, and she was struck by someone driving a straight truck. So you're talking about a very impactful vehicle. And, you know, when you saw a picture of the vehicle, you could see the amount of damage that it would have probably done to our vehicle. So, of course, she worked under the command of Sheriff Andrew Sullivan, great guy, felt extremely bad for him. His brother works for me. So his brother, younger brother, is a police officer here in the city of DeKalb, and he is indeed the sheriff of DeKalb County. His wife used to work for me also. She retired about a year and a half ago. So they're a law enforcement family, and this impacted them extremely, of course, in such a tragic way. You know, you got a young lady, 35 years old, three young children. I think the ages were, I believe, 5, 11, and maybe 14. I'm sure about the 5-year-old. But she had young children. So, and then you had someone who, you know, who was, you know, who happened to be intoxicated at the time of the crash. So of course, these type of situations should not happen. There's just no excuse for it. I mean, we've been dealing with this for years in law enforcement, for years. You know, it's, you would think, you know, you have a problem that's been going on this long, that you have a remedy to it. And we've done everything we can in law enforcement to prevent these type of things from occurring. But they still do, Dave, on a regular basis. And I hate to say it, but I'm going to be 100% candid and transparent about this thing. It won't be the last time. It will not be the last time. That's the unfortunate part about what happened to Deputy Christina Muscle, is her name. And she was, you know, she served her country in the armed forces. She continued to serve as a police officer. And this is how her life ended at 35 years of age, you know. And the thing that upsets me is that, you know, she didn't really get to live her life. I mean, truly. I know we all can do a lot in 35 years. I mean, it's all relative. Some people live an amazing life in a short period of time. And I will say, from what I have heard from her family and from her co-workers at the DeKalb County Sheriff's Office, is that she did live an amazing life in the 35 years she had, which is fantastic. But that here are the things that are not going to happen. She hasn't seen any of her children graduate from any type of school. So she hasn't seen them graduate. You know, she won't be able to see her children get married if they choose to. She won't see her children have children if they choose to. I mean, there's so many things that this young lady will never, of course, have the opportunity to see. And to be honest with you, the children won't have the opportunity to share with their mother. And, you know, and it's just, you know, I think that's the thing when you know, yesterday we're at the funeral, and I know Kenny, Kirk, AJ have all been to law enforcement funeral. I'm sure, Dave, you've been to a few law enforcement, you know, services. And it cuts you, man. It's in your heartstrings, man. It's like, it's so impactful to see that. And then here's the part that I'm going to speak about, because I want the public to know this occurs, but to the point that, you know, they had to cut off comments in a live stream of the services because people are saying inappropriate things, hateful things about someone who has lost their life serving the community. And, you know, and then you have to shut off comments at a time when we're trying to honor someone who gave their life, you know, in the line of duty to their community, and you have to cut the comments off. So, you know, how can people, you know, and, you know, it's just amazing to me. That's why every now and then, and I'm sure all the panelists can speak to this, but, you know, humanity sometimes, I mean, I question it sometimes. And these are the times that I do when I see things like this. I question humanity as a whole. But the you know, the best part about it is the next day, maybe it might not even take a few minutes, sometime 30, somebody, you run into someone who say, hey, who takes you back to where you need to be, you know, hey, you know, and then you feel like, okay, I know I was in a bad moment for a little bit, but now, you know, I feel like, you know, humanity has been able to, you know, come back, and, you know, I see people who care about each other, not just law enforcement, just people in general. It at least restructures me personally. I get back on my foundation. I can stand on all 10 toes, and I feel like, you know, there's a reason for us to do everything we do every day, for everybody that we, you know, we serve. So, that was just a part I just wanted to get out, just for the community to understand that, you know, officers work extremely hard to serve, the community, you know, and they, when they take that oath, Dave, and we've all done it, you know, we've all had our scares and close calls and on this job. And we understood that. We know it's part of the job. But, man, it, you know, when it happens, somebody gives the ultimate sacrifice like Christina did, it hurts. It hurts. And we shouldn't be leaving inappropriate comments and hateful comments in a comment section of a live stream of her services. That to me, just... I don't know, that hurt me. But you know, today's a new day, 24 yeah. hours a day. And now we're back at it, Dave. So I appreciate you giving me a little time at the end of this to speak about her. Cause she was, I think I met her maybe once or twice. I couldn't say I knew her well, but you know, I know her boss well, and he was in a lot of pain over the last week, and I just feel for him. So moving on, right, guys? Right. Time to get back in it. So
in the memory of Officer Christina Mussel, may her memory be a blessing, and thanks for watching and listening to this segment of Behind the Badge, Illinois. Thanks, panel. Appreciate all of you.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Be safe.
Thanks, Dave.